pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have roll call, please?
Certainly. Commissioner Beckman?
Here.
Commissioner Bushy?
Here.
Commissioner DiGiovanni?
Here.
Commissioner Boystein?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Kelly?
I'm here.
And Commissioner Helmer?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, on agenda item number three, this is open period for public participation, and this is for items that are not on the agenda, and the speakers who wish to address the board may do so for up to 2 minutes. Do you have any members of the public who'd like to speak to the board tonight? I see we have a few in the audience.
Yes, sir.
Hello, on the agenda.
Good evening.
Pardon?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and respected board members. My name is Nicholas Gaunt, and I'm an operator at CMSA. And I thank you so much for allowing me to speak here today. Historically, the CMSA board has maintained a competitive salary schedule with agreed-upon competitors in line with the agency's mission, vision, values, and goals. During the past contract cycle, CMSA has experienced a turnover rate of approximately 20%, excluding retirements. These employees have left to pursue both public and private sectors. In light of the increase in the employee turnover, I respectfully ask the board that they continue with its past practice of keeping CMSA's salary schedule competitive and consider increasing our salary position above in order to fulfill our stated goal of, and this is one of our goals, the CMSA will attract and retain high-quality employees by providing a work environment that motivates staff, fosters professional development, values diversity, and promotes a culture of safety. Again, thank you for allowing me to speak here today.
Thank you.
Good evening. Hi, my name is Anthony Smith. I think I submitted a letter. You probably have a copy of it. I just wanted to thank you for allowing me to speak and allowing me to read this letter. Lady and gentlemen of the board, again, my name is Anthony Smith, and I am one of SEIU stewards at CMSA. I'm respectfully before you to represent the opinion of the maintenance staff in regards to the recent salary survey. I'd like to state that our department is only one of a few that makes this agency run as it does. It is the cooperation and hard work across departments that lifts CMSA to exceptional and award-winning status. The staff at CMSA are passionate about their job and feel a strong sense of commitment to the community they serve. Under the leadership of Mr. Dow and the hard work and dedication of CMSA staff, the agency has surpassed above average status and now sets standards in this industry. Despite the dedication of many here, CMSA has experienced a high turnover rate. We just had an operator leave for another agency, and we are currently losing an environmental analyst to another agency, someone that we respect greatly. I think that goes without saying. in our electrical and instrumentation department alone, we have had four individuals try to fill the one position in the last year. One person accepted the position and never showed up for the job. The next quit to go back to the private sector for a higher paying position. The next quit because he couldn't afford to live in the area. And the fourth just started on Monday, and we're great for that. Grateful for that, excuse me. This has been costly in recruitment and training and puts additional stress on and responsibilities on current E&I staff. So I'm here this evening with a simple request to the board. The maintenance staff respectfully requests that Vallejo Sanitary not be used as a comparator in the recent salary survey. Vallejo was not used in 2014, the salary survey then. It wasn't used in the salary survey in 2009. And their job description has not been updated since 2004. We do not believe there is any reason to begin using Vallejo now. In closing, we understand that the board is under no obligation to increase salaries based on the salary survey. However, we feel it is important that CMSA salaries remain competitive in this industry. As future technologies come into view, as permit regulations tighten, and as resources are depleted, it will be imperative for CMSA to have the best talent possible. Retention and cohesion across all departments will be of utmost importance, now and in the future. Respectfully, thank you.
Any other members of the audience wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number four, the consent calendar.
Yes.
May I be heard momentarily on, in response to the public comment?
Sure.
Thank you very much for coming. We don't get to see you very often, and it's great that you're here. And I want you to know that we really appreciate your views, because this agency could not function without you. And you're right. We make jokes that we need to build, we need to add on to this building so that we can have more spots for all of the awards you guys keep winning. So we couldn't win those awards. We couldn't provide the level of service that we provide. And you couldn't, we couldn't be in a position like tonight. We're going to be talking about the cogen on the facility. It's my opinion that CMSA is the most environmentally sound and most significant environmental entity in Marin County. We are that because of what you do. We couldn't be thinking about these next level things if you guys weren't doing such a great job executing every day and thinking of new things. So thank you for coming and telling us about this. We'll take it under advisement, and we will give it great consideration because you took the time to come and tell us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well put, Commissioner Bush. Okay. Consent item, or excuse me, item four on the consent calendar. This is a single motion. We'll pass items 4A through 4J. We have a motion.
I have one comment on the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes.
In the minutes from the April 9th meeting, I would like to just note that Councilmember Bushy was both present and absent as of 10 minutes, and I would like that corrected.
Oh, one place or another?
Schrodinger and Bushy.
Thank you.
Okay. So she was out there.
She was here in spirit.
That.
Yeah, was here in spirit, yeah. Thank you.
But seeing that, she will make that correction and...
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for catching that. So we'll make that correction, and then any other comments or
approve the consent calendar.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any nays? No nays. All right. Agenda item number five. This is the Marin Airport proposal to park Marin Transit buses in the agency's courtyard, and this is to authorize the general manager to prepare a draft lease agreement with Marin Airport.
Okay, thank you, Chair DiGiovanni. So at the end of last month's board meeting, during the commissioner and general manager war report period, I informed you that the CEO of Marin Airport, Mr. Larry DeForest, who's here tonight in the audience with the tie on, that he had contacted me and asked about the possibility of parking some of the Marin Transit District's buses in our corporation yard. He has some conversations with Commissioner Borstein about that possibility, and I have prior conversations with Commissioner Borstein also. So I told Larry that sounds like a great idea. I'll talk with the board chair about the possibility, including on the agenda. The chair was agreeable to doing that, so I reported it out to the board and said that we'd have that on the agenda tonight as a discussion item. Subsequent to the board meeting, this report came by the agency. We had a good conversation, a good meeting. We walked out to the corporation yard, kind of scoped out an area where Ross Valley Sanitary District used to lease property for, you know, their offices, their board meeting room for their vehicles. And I told this report that this portion of the corporation yard, which is about half of it on the north side, and there's a diagram attached to the staff report, there's lots of attachment that shows that area. that it's not really used for anything, and that we don't have any plans for that area. However, the south side of the Corporation Yard is tentatively reserved for potential nutrient removal technologies and systems based on future nutrient removal possible requirements and the sizing and scale of facilities that were identified in our master plan. But the north side is generally open. So we had a good conversation. We talked about, you know, how many vehicles could be located here, the alignment of the vehicles, possibly a restroom, a small storage container for cleanup supplies and other items. And it was a good meeting. So Mr. Laporte then kind of wrapped all of that into a proposal that's attached to the staff report. And also attached is a letter of support from the Marin Transit District's general manager. And so then, you know, I met with our senior staff, and they talked with some of their staff about any issues or the concerns that they have with the potential lease of that portion of the north part of the Corporation Yard. And it appeared that, you know, most of the items that were brought forward at the meeting are things that could be addressed and managed with specific terms and conditions within a property lease agreement, such as, you know, security cameras, looking at the area, not sharing agency restrooms, but having a portable, you know, facility on the site, having an independent person gate from some dedicated parking spaces at the end of the employee parking lot so the bus drivers could enter the Corporation Yard from that area instead of coming around between, you know, the various buildings at the agency. So it's definitely feasible, and we see it, you know, conceptually as, you know, a benefit to the district, you know, for their buses, use of unused land that we have at the agency, and potential revenue for CMSA to offset, you know, operating expenses and assist in funding, you know, current and future capital projects. So our recommendation tonight to staff is to just authorize me to prepare a draft lease agreement that I would work with, you know, our contract attorney on, Mr. Laporte, staff, and bring that back to the board in the future for review and discussion. And I can answer any questions you have, and Mr. Laporte's here to answer questions also.
Very happy to answer any questions.
Dean?
Sure. So, I think it's a great idea. I want to thank Michael for talking to Marin Transit. I think it helps both agencies. I'm glad we're having separate facilities because the unity of our staff and making sure that they have their world and you have your world is important to us. We want our folks happy. We want to make sure that we can make this work. It sounds to me like this is very workable. But it's a great way to help your agency and our agency. And I think as we put together our cogen power facilities, we'll be able to power some of those electric buses lower than you would be paying elsewhere.
Something like that.
So I think you've got empty space back there. It's crazy not to use it.
Just have one question, Mr. Chair. As unlikely as it may seem, were there conditions discussed under which Marin Transit would leave?
You can ask Jason, but I believe that would be part of the lease agreement on how to...
I mean, is it clear under the conditions under which they might have to leave?
We would incorporate that into the agreement. We haven't scoped out the agreement yet. We're really putting anything on paper yet. But we could definitely, you know, include something like that.
Was the length of the term discussed yet?
Was it fine?
We talked, you know, conceptually about like 5 years possibly.
And a renewal?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. It depends on what we...
So it was pretty general.
Oh, yeah, very general, yeah. I mean, it could be, you know, renew each year. It could end on a date certain. Then you negotiate another agreement. There's a lot of different structures that, you know, the term can take in the agreement.
Just want to make sure the expectations were clear.
Sure. I mean, if we feel that we could go 1 year or 2 year with a month to month after that, if that, I don't know if that's acceptable. But
is there something you're concerned about? That
no, just board members change, and I think it just should be clear. You know, all the different possibilities should be covered up front. Went to work, so. Mm-hmm.
From our point of view, we're very flexible on this, so we're very happy to work with any concerns you may have along those lines. I will tell you, as mundane as it seems, it is incredibly difficult to find bus parking in Marin County. And it is also crucial to, you know, carry out our mission to provide public transit that we have some place to park these things. So, but we're, you know, very happy to work on terms that are going to be mutually acceptable. And
well, just for the same reason you want to include conditions under which it would be terminated, if there's an expectation or a desire that is shared at this time that it be a long-term relationship, there are ways to express that too. I just want to say, just be thorough.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Well, the agreement will come back before the board.
I just didn't know to the extent which any of this had been discussed.
Mm-hmm. I would probably bring the initial draft to meet with the chair and kind of work through kind of what we've developed so far and get some initial feedback first. Mm-hmm. Then based on that, you know, do some revisions, then bring, you know, a second draft back to the board.
Mm-hmm. And so we'd get another bite at the whole board would get another bite at the apple to tweak it.
At least once. It could be an iterative process too.
Or and think they can be expressed that would extend beyond the tenure of the board members. It would be helpful for the understanding of future board members. Mm-hmm.
That could be something that's captured maybe in the resolution, too.
Sure.
If the court passes, we can talk about that.
It just seemed to me, when I found out of the needs of what the airporter, I've known Grace Hughes, who founded the airporter for about 1,000 years now. Not quite that old, Grace. I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
It's on the record now.
It's on the record. Oh, no. But for a very, very, very long time. So I was aware that the airporter down there was very cramped for space, and they've been doing... How long have you been working with Marin Transit?
For over 10 years.
For over 10 years. And as the airporter is growing...
13 years.
And transit is growing, I became aware that it was needed a place to put buses. And I knew that we had a spot out here because... You may remember that 3 or 4 years ago, the Ross Valley Sanitary District considered at one point, once again, building a facility out there. But the problem was that we needed more of a long-term commitment than CMSA was really able to give us to actually build a facility out there. So it just seemed to me to have two public agencies be able to work with each other in this mutual kind of way would be a good thing to do, and it would benefit everybody. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll give us another award.
Any other questions, comments? I have a couple of questions. The text calls for 16 buses, but if the site map shows 15 spaces for buses, so I'm not sure.
You could be, you know, 16 would be the maximum number of buses that Larry initially talked about parking here. Right now, I think it's 11.
We have
possibly 5 more if you get another route.
Exactly.
But it's all going to be based on how much space we have and how much space you need between the buses and where you can put the storage container. We have a storage container out there that we want to keep in the same place probably, where you put the restroom. And we have to lay it out. And we've talked about, you know, kind of putting some cones out and figuring out what the width is and how close they can be together, things like that. It may be what's exactly shown here, maybe fewer buses.
Okay.
So we'll just have to figure that out.
And then get the text to match the...
In the agreement stating that, yeah.
Okay. And then how many non-revenue vehicles do you anticipate?
I think approximately half a dozen, and they're just standard passenger cars, they're non-revenue vehicles. Those are actually an integral part of the operation because during shift changes, a driver will come and get one of those and go out and meet a bus that's on the road so that we don't have to bring buses back, you know, in order to change drivers. In the middle of operations. But those are much easier to accommodate. And by the way, on the numbers, we do have other sites, parking areas available. So it's, you know, it's not an all or nothing proposition. Basically, anything that we could get would be extremely useful. That's what it comes down to.
And we're happy to work through Marin Transit
you know, another public agency. It's a good synergy for all the public agencies to work together. So I think on the lease side of things and just the dollars that we'd be anticipating, if this were to be a significantly reduced lease, would that be able to be somehow transferred back to Marin Transit Agency, which therefore could keep fares and everything lower to the general public that we all serve?
There wouldn't be a direct pass-through of the lease expense to Marin Transit. We have a contract with them, and we take care of basically parking, housing, maintaining, insuring, and staffing the buses. And so that's all, those are all costs that we, Marin Airport, have to absorb in performing under that contract. So if we were to take on an additional route, we would get some additional remuneration for providing those services. The cost of parking might, to an extent, be built into that. But I wouldn't say that there's a direct pass-through of expenses here to the transit operation.
I would not want to overcharge anybody for parking, but on the other hand, if we can get some additional income for our ratepayers, I see that as an important job of this board.
Sure.
And the other thing I might add to that is that the we haven't got to the point of talking about, you know, in detail the figures, but this is actually a much more cost-effective solution than a lot of the other ones that we've been considering. So in terms of the overall benefit to the transit system, this would be way ahead of probably, you know, 9 out of 10 other options that we have.
Right up the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the adjacency with your yard right down the street is very, very good.
We'd have a transit supervisor based at our Marin Airport or terminal just down Anderson Drive.
So is the process for determining the lease agreement conditions, including the amount, is it outlined as in the staff report? That's the process.
That's kind of you know, the concept that I was proposing is that we engage a property appraiser like we did back in 2006. We determined the valuation of the entire corporation by square foot, and we hired David Tattersall, who I recently saw at a Marin Forum breakfast, and I asked him about it, and he said he'd be willing to do that. So I don't know if it'd be a brand new, you know, evaluation or appraisal, or it'd be an update of the 2006 that we talked about that. But at least then we get to, you know, determine what the fair market value of the property was. Then we look at the square footage and figure out, you know, how much they actually need, including parking stalls, and just come up with a number and bring that to the board. We'll talk to Larry about that and make sure it was, you know, acceptable with them. Bring it to the board. But we could use, you know, another approach also if you guys have any ideas. But that was just my thought, was follow what we did back in 2006.
Whatever this appraisal costs, can we get it reimbursed by the lessee through the contract?
We could do that, or they could pay for it directly. We have to talk about that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. As long as it's not coming out of our ratepayers.
Yeah, David's not cheap.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You guys are leaving?
We'll let you guys get back to business.
Yeah.
Some of us have to be up in about 8 hours, though.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks,
you all.
Nice to see you.
We heard what he said.
Thank you. I recommend to authorize the general manager to prepare a draft lease agreement with Marin Airport and provide comments and or direction. Well, we already did that part. So I'd authorize the general manager to prepare a draft lease agreement with Marin Airport.
Can I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Very good.
Great. Thank you.
Item number 6 on the agenda, the CMNSA Power Monitoring Program Update. And this is to receive the Power Monitoring Program Update and provide comments.
Okay. So, you know, I've been here as an employee of the agency since 1993. And when I started, you know, saving energy was always important to the agency. We always looked at, you know, things we could do to reduce energy. And the reason for that at that time was that, you know, the original cogen system we had, it only ran on biogas, and that was like 6 or 7 hours a day. The remainder of the day, we bought PG electricity. So we had pretty, you know, expensive electricity bills each month. And over the course of the year, it was a lot of money. So the staff here always looked for ways to reduce our energy footprint. And I remember it started with even turning out lights in various rooms, in the galleries in the treatment plant, and those are high-pressure sodium lights. They take a long time to turn back on. So that was kind of the initial things that we did. And then, you know, just looking at buying equipment that was more energy efficient, things of that nature. And there's a lot of good projects that were done through the 90s. Then the early 2000s, we implemented our first, were developed, and then the board approved our first business plan, and that strategic business plan. And that had, you know, some projects to increase energy efficiency, to reduce the energy footprint, to, you know, save energy overall. And then each strategic plan, every 5 years after that, had various activities that aligned with saving energy and various tangents associated with that. In the last couple years, we have a new model where we have annual business plans that, you know, align with this multi-year strategic plan, and we've had power monitoring, you know, activities associated in that. But attached to the staff report, the first attachment is kind of a good summary list of some of the historic projects that were implemented at the agency to just reduce power. A lot of those are, you know, lighting replacement, you know, moving away from old style, you know, fluorescent to more energy efficient electronic ballast fluorescent lights like what's in here, replacing the high pressure sodium. There are hundreds of those with LED lights, replacing incandescent lights with LED lights, and replacing, you know, constant speed motors with, you know, soft start motors so you don't have that, you know, ramp up of current at the beginning, or installing variable speed motors to reduce energy. So a lot of that's summarized right here, and you see we've saved probably almost, you know, 60 kilowatts of power, you know, since that time, which is about 10% of the agency's, you know, energy demand. So it's pretty good savings, you know, over the last 20 years. So the next evolution of that was, well, we need to maybe monitor how much power each area and piece of equipment uses. Then we can identify other ways to save energy and do studies and various testing to do this. So that's moved forward really well over the last couple of years. We formed a greenhouse gas and energy committee that looks at, you know, these type of projects and scopes things out. And they are instrumental in moving forward both of the monitoring plan activities that were in the two annual business plans. So with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to our technical services manager, Peter Kistenmacher, who's here tonight. And he has a presentation, which is a good summary.
Sure. You're going to tell us how to read this, right?
Sure. As much as I can. I'll defer to Jason.
That was the takeaway.
Well, good evening. I'm Peter Kistenmacher. It's nice to meet you, everyone. And this is a brief update on the power monitoring program, some of the history, where we are today, and some of the plans of where we'd like to be in the future. As Jason alluded to, this was a key objective in both the fiscal year 18 and 19 business plans to specifically increase energy efficiency through implementing a power monitoring program. Staff, some of whom you met earlier, focused on installing equipment over the last several years, and they finished around December of last year. And the Greenhouse Gas and Energy Efficiency Committee has been sort of aggregating the data and analyzing it and preparing some reports the early part of this year, and so now we're ready to present to you. So a very brief background on the power system here at the plant. Energy comes from the PG&E grid up here, and it flows into the main switch gear here. This is a picture there on the right. And from there, it's distributed across around 20 or so motor control centers, or MCCs, that are spread throughout the facility. There's one in this building, you know, one at Headworks, and all these different processes. And then from there, power flows, the electrons flow to the individual plant equipment. So here you see the BioTower pumping system, for example. So historically, CMSA has monitored power at two locations, the main property level, what came in from PG&E at that time, as well as how much power was produced by the cogeneration engine. Now, as of today, we're monitoring power at every single one of these motor control centers, which corresponds to all the major plant areas, and then about 58 or so individual pieces of equipment. So it's a much more granular, detailed view of, you know, how electrons flow around the plant. And we probably have several hundred, you know, pieces of equipment. It wasn't cost effective to monitor every single one of them. So we focused on these 58 because they were larger motors, or they ran around the clock. So they're kind of drawing a steady load of power and large power consumers. This gives you a sense of just what this equipment looks like out there. This is power monitoring equipment inside an MCC. So it's you know, controllers and wires and switches and other electrical items that I'm not that familiar with myself. And these two meters here actually monitor the power coming in from the grid, and in the future also the power that we will be exporting with these various projects that we're planning. So that's a very important meter there. On the
As part of the interconnection work, PG&E installed that upper meter, right? And that's the power delivery meter. And we tested it out, and it actually works. So it's good.
I'm not going to go through this in detail, but this is one of the types of reports that we're now producing. This is a summary report for the facility. So that's in the package you have, the first attachment two, I believe. And so it goes through each main plant area, the admin building, maintenance building, headworks, et cetera. And it's a running 12-month average of the key power usage, both average and total for that facility. So this would tell you, for example, that the aeration tanks over the last 12 months have used about 18% of the facility's power. It's a very useful sort of tool for the O&M department and the engineering department. The second report is much more detailed. This is for those individual 58 pieces of equipment. That's, for example, here, you know, a channel air blower number one. That shows you various power statistics for the month of April of this year, the month of March of this year, April a year ago, and that's not filled in yet because this particular equipment wasn't, you know, installed at that time. And then also a running 12-month average. So it's really a lot of information there that, you know, maintenance staff can use to sort of, and operations staff to look at long-term trends. Is anything unusual going on? Is a, you know, piece of equipment using more power? And why is it? Why are things going on?
Can I ask a question about the previous slide?
Sure.
If you go down to the bottom table and look at the columns, total plant electricity usage, and then skip one, and then on-site electricity generation.
Yeah.
Are those two columns telling us, showing us the efficiency of our total on-site operation with respect to zero net?
Yeah.
How am I to read that and see that in it?
Yeah, we probably should turn that maybe in a... Some kind
this
of pie chart.
When the on-site electric generation is larger than the total plant usage, we've hit the nut.
Well, I'm seeing.
And then we start selling power to this guy over here.
I'm seeing the bottom line.
Yeah. So the bottom line would be 379,000 made on-site, and
that's less than that one.
Right. So we weren't 100% in the last 12 months. Correct.
So we had to purchase the difference.
We had to purchase the difference.
Remember, we had that's what the middle column right in between is telling you. This. We purchased last year 70 kilowatt hours.
That should be the difference between that and this. Should be this column, correct.
Well, we're just generally always discussing in terms of we've hit where we're...
Yeah. So the ultimate goal would be where the on-site generation is greater than plant usage and the export is negative. It's positive here, but that we were sending it out. That's what we want to get to through the power delivery program.
And also remember, we had a month when our cogen was down because the wiring was wrong.
And that's shown in August of 2018, I think.
I'm not judging it. I want to understand that.
It was in February.
That was August. We got 255,000.
February is 82.
This is where we reported.
The generator failed that month, and in February we had the top end overhaul of the engine.
The 353.
Which was for most of the month.
Sure. Peter, can I clarify one thing as long as we're paused right now? So on attachment one, I see that we, through various projects, we are saving annually 537,000 kilowatt hours, and then the average monthly usage appears to be 457,000 kilowatt hours. So we've basically already, through our through our efficiency measures, cut out essentially more than a month's worth of energy usage every year.
Yeah, good way to look at it, yeah.
That is fantastic.
And so when we get the second cogen going,
once we start up the new cogen, it's 25% more efficient than the current one. So with the same flow of biogas, we'll almost be energy self-sufficient, and then we can start to export much closer.
Yeah. And this column, to add to this line of thought, this is the natural gas we currently purchase, because at times we run out of biogas, so hopefully in the future that will be zero. We make all our own biogas, and then these show kind of the fuel, quote-unquote, that we import to make the gas, so the tons of food waste and fats, oils, and grease that come in.
If you go to the attachment 3, I really like that attachment 3, because if you're looking at, for example, the real high one, digester mixing pump number 2 and digester mixing pump number 1, at 42.8 and 43.2, if you start seeing them go up, you're talking about thinking about maintenance that you hadn't already planned on, because maybe something's drawing power that shouldn't, because it's not running at peak efficiency.
Yeah.
It also tells you where your biggest bang is to replace that equipment.
If you saw these slides before, what about 3 slides in the digester mixing pump slide? So, excellent. Yeah, that's the 14% of the facility's power goes to 2 pumps.
Yep.
So that's a huge bang for the buck if we can reduce that. And we have a plan to study that.
How old are these?
Those were installed, in, I think it was in 2012, maybe. Became operational.
So for that kind of machine, it's not that old.
No.
But they, since we're on that, they do run around the clock, 24/7, full throttle. And staff has installed a variable frequency drive, which allows you to slow down the pump.
Okay.
And also, we could consider running them maybe 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off, because they produce a tremendous amount of flow that is mixing these million gallon digesters. So if the process is not impacted, and they'll carefully study that, then we could potentially run them 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off.
The key factor there is in study that, because with a lot of engines, the power fluctuations is what wear down the engine. It's better to keep it going than to turn it on and turn it off all the time. But I leave that to you to study. I'm sure you're going to look at that.
Any other questions on this item? On this part, I'll just keep going. One of the other early success stories to highlight was this effluent pump block heater replacement project. These are very large pumps at the back end of the plant that only turn on during the peak wet weather events, sometimes only a handful of times a year. They're a diesel-driven pump, so they have actually diesel generators here that rotate and drive these pumps. And just like a car, they don't like to have a cold start, so they have these electric block heaters on there that heat up the engine before you start it. And during a review of the power monitoring data, staff realized that there was a constant power load in that part of the plant, even though these pumps weren't operating in the summer or any other time. So they zeroed in on these block heaters and realized they were running around the clock, and now they only turn them on a day or two in advance of the storm. And they also, as you can see in that picture, they were able to replace it with a much smaller unit. This is the old one. And for the temperature conditions here, the smaller one seemed to be perfectly fine. So it's a nice low energy savings find. The other system they're looking at right now is the channel air systems. This is basically comprised of blowers, various pipes, and these diffusers that run along the channels around the plant. And the purpose is to simply keep things in suspension, so a piece of sand or sediment doesn't settle out there. And currently, they do run 24/7 as well, and consume about 3% of the facility power. And so, staff has actually put them on a timer on the 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off type situation, and are monitoring, you know, what happens to the channels. And if the channels are fine, then we could run like that permanently and save, you know, 7,000 kilowatt hours a month. We talked about the mixed pumps, that would be a similar type of study. And then the last item was sort of maybe like a computer-based automated trigger alert system. So we could, you know, make some simple if-then statements in the computer system that says if this grid pump number 4 uses, you know, 10% more energy than it did last month and the rolling 12-month or something like that, then you know, maintenance would go check out the pump and see if something's going on.
Very cool.
That's pretty much the summary.
Thanks, Peter.
I have a question for Peter. It's, I want to shift gears a little bit. You guys have done a brilliant job of overall reducing consumption, you know, energy, classic energy efficiency. Looks great, awesome. I'm wondering if you've used your electricity consumption monitoring data, though, to think about how you could manage your demand charge to reduce the cost of the electricity that we need to buy. Because not every kilowatt hour costs the same. And if you have pumps or any other equipment that you can run or that you can pause during your demand right. charge time, which is typically in the peak time in the evening, then you can drive down your demand charge, which is a part of the calculation for your price. So you might want to think that's the next level.
Yeah, since we were a co-generator, our target is to co-generate 100% of the time biogas. If we don't have the biogas, use natural gas. So we're always producing our own power. Mm-hmm. We're always having, until we get to a point to export, we're always needing to bring in a little power, primarily because that the cogeneration system doesn't respond, my understanding, as fast to changes in load. So always bring a little in, and additionally bring a little in because we're not allowed to export yet. If we didn't have natural gas or we only ran, say, the cogen 12 hours a day, then we'd have to use that type of a model that you're talking about, where we're going to run the cogen during the peak periods of the day. We're going to reduce the load as much as we can during the peak periods of the day, so we extend the cogen runtime farther into the park peak periods of the day and stuff. That's a good idea, but I think the way we run it now, there's not a lot of changes that we can make. We could reduce some, we have peak shaving for different types of situations, but that's usually in the event that there's a power outage and we're having to buy all of our power, so we try to shave, you know, some of the load, so we're minimizing that.
Right, at the right time.
Yeah, there's a few strategies that operations has, but yeah, that's a good idea, but I just...
Sounds like you're on it.
You know, we're trying to be.
Okay.
Hey, central features, we run those at night, right? I believe for that very same reason, maybe? Or?
Yeah, that's more of kind of a historic reason we do that. We don't necessarily have to do that anymore, but just operations is used to running at night.
Okay. So how widely during the day do the inflows vary?
The flows vary during the day, you know, consistently, and there's two, you know, diurnal peaks during the day. So you have the morning peak comes in around 10 o'clock in the morning. So you have extremely low flows in the evening. Then people start to get up to go to work, showering, you know, cooking, you know, and all this. Then it takes a long time for all that water to get through the collection systems to the plant. And usually arrives here, you know, between 9 to 11 o'clock. So we'll hit our peak daily flows during that time. So if you look at, say, during average dry weather flow, we might be 7.5 MGD for the day. The peak may be during that particular day, maybe 13 MGD that comes in. Then it drops off, you know, during the afternoon. Then it peaks in the evening, like when kids are open school, when, you know, parents come home from work and stuff. We do have an operator here, if you would like to elaborate on that. Have I got that okay?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a diurnal.
I was just saying
no times
how that would correlate to her the peak charge time, if it's the same.
Yeah, the general flow that happens at the agency, it happens every day, and it shifts a little bit depending on the season and events and vacations, things like that. But because our plant is elevated and each process is a little lower than the next process, we use gravity to move the water through most of the plant. So that's beneficial because then we don't have a lot of internal pumping to pump around. Now, if we were a plant that, say, was at ground level, we had to do a lot of internal pumping, then during those peak flows, there would be a much higher energy demand because we're moving that water around. But I think during the peak flows, our energy demand doesn't increase that much. It increases a little bit, but not significant.
Thank you.
Did I get that right there?
You got it.
Thank you. He's disagreeing with me. He'd be a nice guy.
I think it's cool you can measure all this.
Yeah, it's a wonderful tool to do your analysis of where energy is used and predictive maintenance on what may be starting to fail and everything. I was wondering how you guys, one, this is great information, and if you guys are considering sharing it with other agencies to sort of see how you're, to show where you got, where we are at, and then also just to see if there's anyone else doing similar sort of studies and seeing if your data correlates well with other plants, and maybe there's things to be learned from other people doing the same thing.
There's an award for that.
It's an award. There's great papers to be had on those. And so, anyhow, it's good to share that knowledge
with
definitely,
others.
Definitely, and,
yeah.
Would it make any sense sometime to maybe suggest that some of the agencies, RVSD, could use some of this power monitoring at our big pump stations and use your ability to watch what's going on, you know, maybe to show us if a pump maybe needs some maintenance that our current systems wouldn't allow us to see trends. Maybe that could be something to share with the Santa Fe and the Cordillera.
Sure. That's a great idea, and you know, so for the first thing that has to happen is that for that to work, which is a great thing, is that each of the GPA satellite collection agencies needs to be connected to the CMC SCADA system. So we could that could be by line or by radio telemetry. That way we're getting the data from the individual pump stations, major, minor, whatever, and that way we can set up the trending graphs to monitor that. Like right now, since we operate and maintain all San District 2 stations, we monitor what's going on there. We're not monitoring the power as much, but we know when pumps come on, when they come off, things of that nature, but we could begin monitoring the power once we kind of get our system dialed in. Ross Valley is starting to install new instrumentation and, you know, PLCs at their pump stations. I think, you know, at the Bonaire, the Kent Field, you know, the one in front of the Bonaire Center too. And they're tying those to our SCADA systems. That's been a project that Greg Norby started, and we moved that forward. And some SCADA screens are set up to monitor those stations, but that's kind of in development in terms of procedures and what Ross is going to do with that information. San Rafael saying there's a couple stations that we monitor, but I think San Rafael has decided to send the information over to the Public Works Building in a collaborative project with the stormwater pump stations that Public Works operates. So we're not receiving that data. But they could get another antenna and point it here at each station, and we could receive that data too. So it's all possible, that's for sure.
Good job.
I think energy monitoring is huge, you know, for a variety of reasons. Creating our own power to maintain our own equipment. You know.
Well, this is an informational item, just to brief you on the business plan items.
Out of work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My Lord.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Oh, only here.
Bye,
guys.
Good evening.
We just have Ken now.
Ken's taking the budget.
Yes, Ken.
Last of the weekends.
Okay, moving on to item 7 on the agenda, the pre-purchase of the cogeneration system. This is to authorize the general manager to prepare a cogen system pre-purchase contract and solicit proposals.
Thank you, Chair D.J. Bonner. So the pre-design for the new cogen system is wrapped up, you know, the board asked for a peer review and a pre-design a couple months ago, so we hired Black & Veatch, an international engineering firm, to do the peer review. They've submitted the peer review report. They said that, you know, the pre-design looks pretty good. They had a few minor comments. Those are being considered by Corolo and our project team and being integrated into the final design. So the June board meeting will have a final design contract for the third-gen system before the board. So the design is going to go through this calendar year, maybe into a little next calendar year. Then we have a, you know, a advertisement and bid and award period, maybe 3 months total for that. Then we'd have a construction period. That could be a year to 18 months, depending on what the actual scope of work turned out to be and the complexity of ordering things and integrating. So that's kind of what the schedule we have right now, and that's in, you know, funding for that's in the CIP. And looking at the CIP in preparation of the draft budget in fiscal year 21, which is at the toward the end of the construction of the new engine, we have a major overhaul schedule for the existing engine. And that's a, I think it's like a 50 or 60,000 hour overhaul. Last one we had done was in early 2013. And it takes, you know, 3 to 4 months. The industry shut down, decoupled from everything, shipped up, you know, picked up, shipped off site, major rehab of the engine system of the generator, put back together, shipped back to CMSA, reconnected up, started up. Bay Area Airport comes in, they have to verify emissions. So it might be 3 or 4 months total if there's no problems with the transportation or the on-site work. And I don't think anybody was on the board in 2013. Mary Beth, were you here then?
I was looking at the end of 2013.
We had some major issues the last, you know, off-site overhaul where the generator was not repaired properly and caught fire. We had to shut down the engine. Then they shipped out, they repaired it and brought a new engine, brought it back. It was rewound at the wrong pitch, so it was, you know, sending these, you know, harmonics out through the electrical system, which impacted the emergency generator. And we had a settlement agreement with them, so they provided a brand new generator that we kept on site, installed during another overhaul, a minor overhaul. So things that happened during the off-site overhaul. So we're looking at, so here's the schedule for this new installation. Here's this manufacturer-recommended overhaul. If we do that when it's planned, then we have to buy power for 3, 4, 5 months. And we'd schedule this during the non-peak period, try to get wrapped up by May 1st. So we're saying, well, what can we do to avoid buying, you know, several months of deep green power with all the demand fees and, you know, demand period charges? I mean, it'd be very expensive if we didn't get it done by May. So we thought, well, maybe we could just extend the runtime on the engine. That was the first thought. And we thought that because when we've had the top end and bottom end overhauls by service providers that are done on site, they've always really complimented us on how well maintained the engine is, how clean everything looks. We thought, well, it's pretty well maintained. We're following the preventive maintenance activities schedule pretty strictly. Well, maybe we can extend it, you know, a little bit of time. Well, you know, worst case scenario would be like extending it 8 to 9 months. That's a lot of extra run hours. So, of course, you know, Waukesha, the factory, and the local service companies, they don't recommend that, as you'd expect. So we started looking at, okay, what's another way that we can do to shorten the new system's project schedule to hopefully, you know, so it's wrapped up and operating by the time we can take this out of service and save some of the energy costs. And so we've done one thing. We've worked with Corolo to shorten the design schedule. So we've done it in 6 months. And they were in like 8 or 9 months. And we thought, well, we're trying to shorten the project schedule. What can you do? So they're going to shorten that to 6 months. So that's great. Then we said, well, how can we shorten the construction window then? We can't really shorten the bid and advertisement period for some statute, California statute requirements in the public contract code. But Peter had the idea, and it's something that we've done here a couple times in the past, how about we pre-purchase the cogeneration system and its major components and do that concurrent to the final design. So that way, toward the end of the final design, we've already selected a new system. We know exactly what the components are, all the technical details. Those can be integrated into the design, so that way the design's a little more specific to that engine. And then we award the contract. The engine's either on-site waiting to be installed, or it's going to be delivered pretty soon. ideally. So we thought, well, we could do that. So there's some benefits to doing that, you know, we shorten the design schedule and hopefully save some energy procurement costs, that there's a little less risk for the contractor because he doesn't have to order the engine and go through the whole submittal review process. It can take a lot of time, so there's some lower risk, lower overhead costs for the contractor. Our design costs will be more because we have the pre-design package in there and working on that. But then the engineering services during construction, where we hire the design engineer, that's essentially eliminated for all the cogen, you know, procurement because that's during their design. So that may be a wash. But we think there's benefits to the agency, and we'd make sure we had the proper language in the contract documents, so the general contractor still has unit responsibility for receiving the engine and then installing it, and we don't take ownership until it's actually installed. So we'll work with our contract attorney on, you know, designing that language to minimize the risk to the agency. But that's our conceptual plan, and we're just presenting that to the board to obtain authorization to prepare a pre-purchase procurement contract, and then send the contract and request for proposals to Jenbacher and Caterpillar and other manufacturers of engines that have a record of operating on biogas, and then go through an evaluative selection process and bring a recommendation to the board at some point, probably in the fall. Yes, sir.
By using the pre-purchasing approach as a means of fast-tracking the work, compared to a more normal approach that would include the purchase of the engine and the contract, are there savings that are realized outside of the pre-purchase package itself?
Well, we would think we'd save on the construction contract.
Because less risk for everybody.
Yeah, less risk for the contractor, and they're not spending all the time as the middle person courting between us and the designer and the supplier. And we'd hope that, you know, we would get good proposals through a competitive process, you know, separate. Same kind of thing a general contractor would do.
So
we're thinking that it would be, you know, equivalent cost, you know, at least hopefully a savings.
And taking on all those, the agency taking on all those risks is reflected and should be reflected in the final contract cost.
That's the idea, yeah.
Thank you.
So if this was authorized, what we'd do is we'd make sure the contract with Crowlo that you'll see next month has a separate, you know, task for working with CNSA staff and our contract attorney to prepare this pre-purchase contract and the RFP that go along with it.
The upside is that we do it this way, and conceivably everything, the stars line up, and we don't have to purchase power from the outside versus we could be buying 4, 5, 6 months worth of power while the cogen is down and they're installing the other one, which runs $40,000 a month, give or take a little.
On a good month, it might be in the high 20s, but it could be higher than 40 also. It's kind of a ballpark number.
So there's a risk financial there also.
Yeah. The schedules that are attached, you know, Peter and I talked a lot about, and make sure everything's perfectly lined up to where it'll be operational, and then we'll take the one out of service. So we hope it may not happen that way, but our hope is that it does, but at least shrink down the period of time that we're buying power.
How would we feel about delaying the overhaul by like 1 month as opposed to like 8 or 9 months? Would that be something that we might consider?
We could definitely do that. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It just, you know, our staff got really, you know, nervous when we said 8 or 9 months.
So what is the cost of power if we were to purchase all our power per month?
During the, it's highly variable, but it could be anywhere from 25 to 45 during non-peak periods. During peak period, you know, it could be a lot more than that. Because I think our peak period demand charge is like, you know, it's like $17 or $18 per kilowatt. And if we're pulling in, say, 675 kilowatts, 617, that's just a one-time charge. And it's over a 15-minute time period. So you could be great all month. And if you blow that 15-minute window, that's a big charge.
What's the estimated cost on the pre-purchase contract?
I don't have any idea on that right now. That's something to talk to Paul about.
We don't know what the engine is going to, what they're running at these days.
The only information we have, what was part of the pre-design, and there was a quote just for the engine from the manufacturers, and I have to go back and look at that, but it was, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. But you'd end up buying, you know, the engine and radiators and heat exchangers, and we haven't got to that point of, you know, scoping that out. It'll be something during the final design that we work on.
So we're, this purchase agreement that we're considering giving authorization for is the estimated cost is $1 million, $1.5 million?
Maybe. I mean, all I'm doing right now is getting, hoping to get authorization to prepare a pre-purchase specification and contract. Mm-hmm. Then we'll send that out with an RFP, and then we'll get, you know, all the different, you know, prices from different suppliers. But part of that pre-design is going to be, you know, just the engine itself, then there's going to be the generator, then there's going to be all the ancillary equipment. And all of those are different cost components, and I don't have a sense of what all those pieces, you know, cost together right now. That'll be something that'll evolve during that task in the final design contract. And I can bring that, as soon as I get some more solid information, I can bring that to the board. But right now, we don't have that, those individual cost components right now. But it may be $1 million to $1.5 million, and that it might be in that ballpark.
We have that in the budget.
Yeah, we have Carollo's pre-design construction cost estimate in the budget, and we also have engineering services construction cost and CM services cost. We have all the different, you know, project cost elements included in the CIP. Some of those are just based on, you know, a percent of the estimated construction cost, like design might be. I think we had design at 8% of the construction. We had CM at 5% of construction, things like that. It's kind of rule of thumb numbers for that size of and scale of project.
Last comment?
Sure.
We're talking about purchasing the electricity in 2 years. The price of electricity is unlikely to be going down. So 2 years out, you know, we're looking at 10% or more of an increase. So the economics of this deal are only going to get better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Plus just the time value of money. CPI going up 3% a year, say, over 8 months. Mm-hmm. That's nothing on such a large dollar project. It saves money there, too.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate the creativity to make the timing optimize.
It all looks good on the graphs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we keep this graph.
All right, we're trying to sell the idea.
We got a plan.
We got a Gantt charter. This is going to happen.
I'd like to make a motion after public comment.
Any public comment? See any? I'll receive a motion.
I'll move the staff recommendation to authorize the general manager to prepare a cogeneration system pre-purchase contract and solicit proposals from qualified suppliers.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great, thanks. So, Joe, so to address your question, you know, we'll talk to Cole about that. And once we identify all those components, we can ask them to kind of prepare what they believe the cost could be. Then we can bring that information back to the board as an informational item, just to let you know that we think it's going to be $1 million, $1.5 million. And then as we get closer to finish out the package and refine things a little bit, we can give you more updated figures. But then ultimately, it's going to be what the proposals are.
Sure. Oh, sure. I'm just trying to get an idea of the ballpark with the magnitude of the cost that you're going to bring back to us for award
probably,
at some point.
Probably seven-figure magnitude.
That's what I would expect.
Real high six. Probably not.
It'll probably be a seven-figure. Okay. Item number 8. Proposed budget for fiscal years 20 and 21.
I had a PowerPoint, so instead of looking through the budget and going through all the tables, I usually have a PowerPoint here, and I got one. Let me load it up real quick.
So this is a just a review of the proposed budget, and we will be taking no action tonight. Mm-hmm. It will be brought back to us in at the June 11th meeting for approval.
That's right.
We're just looking for any comments from the board, any suggested changes, things like that. Okay. So all the tough questions I'll direct to Ken.
I'm ready.
So every year I give kind of a very similar presentation to the board, that we can focus on kind of the high level, and then we can answer any questions you have. So we're really going to focus on the operating budget, revenues, expenses, then look at the capital improvement program. You know, the 10-year CIP probably has maybe 50 different, you know, types of categories in it. We roll those up into four main categories. So I'll be showing just the sum of the four main categories, and then just highlighting a few of the projects. And then what we're going to do in terms of preparing the final budget. In terms of overview, so contacted the Finance Committee early in the year and proposed developing a two-year budget. And they all responded back. They thought that was great. And they said, well, go ahead and prepare that and bring it to us, you know, in the April timeframe to review. So we did that, and we met with the committee, you know, a couple weeks ago on Wednesday the 24th, and reviewed, you know, the main, you know, components of the draft budget. And those were attached to the staff report. Got some good feedback from the committee. It was about a three-hour meeting, so we got in some detailed discussions, which was great. And essentially, the outcomes that were they accepted, you know, the different elements of the budget, and they're recommending the board accept it and just direct us to prepare the final budget, which we'll bring back to the board at the June 9th meeting. So, you know, we have a five-year revenue plan that the board approved early last year, and the revenue information is provided to the member agencies. It's been integrated into their budgets, their financial plans, and we're in the second year of the plan right now, so we have some good revenues coming in. And on the operating side, the revenues are greater than the expenses, which is great, so we have a balanced operating budget, which we're always happy about. And as they mentioned, at the June meeting, we'll bring the GFOA version, and that's the Government Finance Office Association version of the budget. So it's going to be essentially a lot of the descriptions and schedules that are in here, but a lot more narrative and more tables and just good qualitative information. Then, since it's a two-year budget, if there's any adjustments that we think should be made on the capital side, or say PG&E costs go significantly higher, we'll bring proposed budget adjustments to the board next year at the May or June meeting for the second year of the budget. On the revenue side, so in the revenue plan, we have a 3.5% total revenue increase built in. So that's operating debt service and the capital fee. The regional charge, which is the operating and the capital fee, that's allocated to the GAPA members using the financial policies 36-month flow and strength methodology. And we've been using that for the last several years. And we're continuing to just budget about $31,000 on capacity charges, even though this year we'll probably exceed $600,000 in capacity charges, which is a great thing. Interest earnings are increasing. They're about 2.7% now, so we're using that in the budget. Next year, we'll be receiving this reimbursement from FEMA for the Anderson Drive Hillside repairs, and that project should be wrapped up in September. And then, based on a Finance Committee recommendation of the board approval, we moved the debt issuance from FY 20 to 21, so that's built into the budget. And then all the other revenue sources are pretty, you know, they're relatively the same. There's little fluctuations, but nothing really noteworthy to point about those. And as you remember, the debt service doesn't change each year. At least the allocation is based on an MOU that was approved by the CMSA and member agency board, so it's tied to the average of the 2006 to 2016 EDU rate. So here's kind of the rolled up numbers. So here's the budget, the projection, proposed 20 budget and 21 budget. So we're bringing a little more revenue than we thought last year at this time. And that's primarily due to capacity charges, even though this number is going to be probably a 6 here instead of a 4, maybe a 7. So we'll have additional revenues coming in. And whenever we have additional operating revenues per financial policy, those flow right in, most of those flow right into the unrestricted capital reserve to fund current and future capital. And the draft budget's increasing on the revenue side about 8%. A lot of that's due to the FEMA reimbursement, which is here, and also the 3.5%, you know, up here for the regional charge. And then the 21 budget, you have the 3.5% built in up here. You see debt service stays around the same. And those are figures right from the official statement, which is the bond document. Contract services are slightly increasing, and this is primarily due to the wastewater fee component of the service contract San Quentin is tied to the operating and capital budgets of the agency. The capital budget's increasing primarily due to the cogen project. So that's why San Quentin's component of the service fee is increasing. It's going up from like $500,000 to $800,000 next year. So we have 8% increase here. This year it's about 48, and that's really driven by
$9 million
this planned debt issuance. And that still has to be, you know, discussed with the finance committee and brought back to the board. Probably, you know, a few discussions on that. So any questions on the revenues? It's all looking pretty good, the projections.
Just to clarify what you said about the contract services with San Quentin, is it the more we spend, the more San Quentin pays us?
Yeah, they have a flow and strength allocation method too. So what we do is we look at the flow and strength of the members. It's not a GPA, it's more the collection agencies, and we consider San Quentin a collection agency. So we'll allocate our operating costs and capital costs based on their percentage rate relative to the others, which is tied to how much water they send us and how much stuff is in the water. So if the capital side goes up, like the $5 million that's, you know, in there for the cogen construction in 21, their wastewater fee component is going to go up also.
I see.
Basically, they're paying for a percentage of operation, essentially.
Yeah. Okay, so revenue is looking good. Then expenses, there's a lot of information here, but I'll kind of roll through it. So operating expenses are increasing 4.9% next year and 4.2%. These are projections. And here's, you know, really kind of roll up the reasons why. Employee compensation increase tied to, you know, various CPI. CPI this year is like 3.9, last year was 3.9. We have a cap of 3 in our MOU and similar document for unrepresented employees. So that's built into the budget. Then the cap is 4% for 21, so we're just including that in the budget. If the CPI is lower, then of course we'll pay the CPI. For this upcoming year, we have 14 employees that are eligible for a step increase within their classification grades. So to be conservative, we assume that they're going to move up and get good evaluations. CalPERS pension costs are increasing. The employer contribution rate, which is tied to payroll, is increasing. And the unfunded actuarial liability is increasing pretty significantly. I think it's about $180,000 for next year. And that information is right out of an actuarial evaluation report that we received from CalPERS that Ken was sharing with me this afternoon. Then the board approved the internship program last month, so we've allocated $45,000 for that, which is equivalent to 1.75 FTEs spread out over the year, multiple interns. $17. Now the board approved a $15 to $21 range. We assumed $17 for the budget. And as in the consent calendar, we had the chemical supply contract item. There's increases in every bulk chemical that we buy. Those are competitively bid on a regional basis. So that was a big, like our ferrochloride increased 35%, hypochlorite 10, bisulfite 10%, hypochlorite 5%, peroxide 5%. Big increases across the board on chemicals. We did have a reduction in dental insurance based on the board decision last month to move from Delta Dental to a self-insured program. So that's a little savings. Then you're all aware of MMWD's planned increase, so we've incorporated that into the budget.
Do you know what that is for you? What the dollar amount is?
Of MMWD?
Increase, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's in the budget, I guess. Yeah,
it's $30,000.
The capital piece is $30,000. And I talked with, you know, Ben Wertstein. He said, yeah, we even charge that to public entities, and since you're on the property tax rule, we'll just include that in your monthly invoice.
That's nice.
Yeah, I thought we'd get a pass on it. But yeah, so there's a like a 4%, you know, rate increase that's part of this. Then there's the big capital piece. Then rinse sanitary service, they have, you know, an increase that's been approved that will be passed on to us. Not a big dollar amount, but it's a big percentage. Then based on a discussion with the board a few months ago, we've included 7.5% for PG&E and natural gas increases. We had a couple of workers' comp claims with employees. Both those employees are gone now, but they were very expensive. I'm on the CSR Army Executive Board. We have closed sessions. We look at all these workers' comp and liability claims, and I saw ours, and they were big dollars, you know, for the pool. And because of that, our experience modification rate increased significantly, so our premium is likely to increase about this much on workers' comp side.
How long will that go on for?
That'll affect us for 3 years.
Like car insurance?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a loan. It's not really insurance. There's loan money. They're going to get every dime of it back.
Then a lot of our contracts, like the biosolids hauling, biosolids reuse sites, contracts with you know, private laboratories for analyses, they all have CPI adjustments in their contracts, so that increases. And our budget has like about 140 different line items. Probably 80 of those we have control over, but they're all really small numbers compared to some of these. So because we were aware of a lot of these increases that were happening, you know, I have to commend that our managers and account administrators, they really sharpen their pencils and look at where can we keep things as flat as possible or minimize the increase or even have some decreases. So the staff did a really good job, but it didn't have a huge impact compared to some of these bigger numbers that are in the budget.
I have a question. When I was going through the budget, if there was one number, it wasn't large dollars, but it was a big, like 80-something percent increase on benefit administration. And I just was wondering what that is. It's only like $15,000, but it went up.
There's an administrative fee for the new dental plan. So the total cost of dental plan is like $35,000, but that includes their administrative fee, and that was like $9,600. That's added to that, and that caused the jump that you're talking about.
Okay.
Any more questions on kind of the general changes in expenses? So this is what the numbers look like. So here's the budget projection and the two proposed budgets. So our projections are expenses will be a little less than budget. And that's usually what happens each year. So any savings there, you know, in addition to additional revenues, that's all flows into that unrestricted capital account. Then here's the two, you know, that's the 4.9% and the 4.6% increases here, bottom line. So you can see on the chemicals I was talking about, there's not that big of an increase shown here, but if you look at some of the accounts, there's some big increases. There's a couple reductions. So the CIP, we normally just roll it up into these categories. So we do charge the equivalent of two FTE salaries to the CIP. And then the projects roll into these categories, and so we're looking at about $3.5 million the upcoming year, and then we're looking at $8.8 the following year. And the bulk of that is in the account for the construction of the new cogen system, and the design is in this account here. Then here's just a few of the projects. A seismic study, which was a recommendation in the master plan. So we'll be doing that to see, you know, what's the risk of the agency for large seismic events, and for the things that we can do here to minimize the risks. That switchgear, the main electrical distribution system that Peter was talking about, right now, that's scheduled for replacement in several years, and it costs about $2 million to replace that. So we're going to bring in an expert and do a full assessment of it and determine, hopefully, is that the right time to do it, or is there some, you know, little improvements we can make, some cleanup, and push it out in the future. So we'll kind of have, you know, that information. But a little project is we're going to install a air conditioning system in the building so it keeps the equipment cool. And we're going to install a connection on the outside of the building that ties to the switchgear. So if PG&E power goes out, cogen's offline, and the emergency generator doesn't start, we can go tow a generator to the switchgear and power our facilities. So it'll be like a double backup type system. Then we have the cogen system we talked about. We're starting a program where we're going to do some, you know, rehabilitation work on the four clarifiers over the next, you know, 4.5 years. This is the overhaul work we were talking about. This is some those blowers that you saw a picture of in Peter's presentation. Some of those are originals. So we're looking at replacing those and all those little diffusers and some of the channels. That's kind of a good rehab project. And then we talked with the finance committee about the idea of procuring new financial software, and they thought that was a good idea. So that's been included into the IT line item in the capital program. The financial software we have now has been here since the agency started operation with various upgrades. So it's pretty old.
What is it?
OSAS?
Open Systems Accounting Software. It just is a standard canned package, you know, that you could buy. It probably cost like $3,000 when it was new, but it's just been here for so long, it's definitely seen its life.
Mm-hmm. So those are the projects. So the next would be just, you know, if you guys, you know, have any suggestions, you know, for adjusting any of the items you saw in the budget or some ideas that we should consider, then we'll take a closer look at all of the items. We've already identified some things that we need to make minor adjustments on in the operating budget. And then we'll bring, you know, the final budget back to the board at the June 9th meeting. And if it's approved then, we'll post it on the website. We'll send it to the GFOA for consideration of the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award, which I didn't mention to you guys. We received that for last year's budget. So then we put that up on a little... So they stopped giving us individual award plaques. Now you just get the one plaque and get the little emblem to put on there for this year. Saving space, you know?
No, they're saving money. They should get a budget award.
Yeah.
It's probably the only money they saved last year.
So that's the that's kind of the high level overview of the budget. So Ken and I can answer any detailed questions you have, or entertain any ideas for changes or revisions.
I had a couple just on presentation of the budget, and that's just getting consistency on terminology of mainly. Starting on page three, we talk about the CMSA proposed binding budget, but fiscal year, we should just be fiscal year 20, fiscal year 21, and that's consistent throughout all the reporting. We talked with the finance committee.
No problem.
The other item I had was in the table on page 11, just tying the notes at the bottom to the other financing sources. So the $450,000 for the FEMA reimbursement, somehow tie that, and also for the...
We talked about that at the meeting, didn't we? Yeah, so it didn't happen.
We'll include those on the next final one.
Okay. And that's about it. Otherwise, I thought it was a very solid and detailed presentation of the budget. And I know we had a chance to preview it sort of in the finance committee. And that went very well. And we spent a lot of time on it. And so it's pretty well vetted. That's all my comments.
Thank you. What are those changes?
Thank you for the presentation. I have to explain any questions.
Great. Okay, so
no comments. No further comments.
No, I think I may comment between now and the next meeting, but I'll call you.
Okay, sure, no problem.
Yeah. And if you could hide whatever you bring back, if there's something that happens, transpires in between, highlight it.
Oh, definitely.
Like final presentation.
Yeah, like these two items here we'll highlight in the staff report. Then a couple things that we've identified we'll highlight. Anything that comes from the board between now and when the agenda goes out, we'll highlight in the staff report also. Sure.
I think in this agency, it'll work real well to have the two-year budget so that you're not starting next year's budget, starting next week.
Right. I'm very excited about that.
Running for Senate, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Get elected and start running again. So.
That's Congressman.
Yeah, whichever one it is.
2 years.
Maybe 2 years.
Okay, so just direction from the board to prepare the final budget.
They were so directed.
Okay, sounds good. About that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Ken.
You're very good, Ken.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Okay, item number 9, agency property assessment. This is to consider forming an ad hoc committee to work with staff to perform. And I'm inserting a space planning assessment on the agency's property.
Yeah, don't have a lot more to add on that beyond that. You know, the CMSA, we don't have a lot of property and a lot of space, but we've talked about the hillside in the past. And what's the value of the hillside? You know, is there a potential market for that? We have the 1 acre corporation yard, you know, where we might have a lease, you know, out there at some point, but we need to reserve some land, you know, for, you know, potential new treatment systems. We have a lot of space around, you know, the admin building that you could move out. There's little pockets of other land at the agency that could potentially use for something. So in talking with Chair DiGiovanni recently, we thought it would be good just to identify all these spaces and what they could be used for and just do kind of a needs space assessment and then bring that back to the board and get some direction.
Great idea. And how many acres did you say is across the street? You told me earlier.
I thought it was something like maybe 30 or 40. Did I say that?
Really?
That shop.
It goes up to the
so
ridge.
I want to see what's. I'd be interested in serving on the staff.
That's a very unofficial number. But we have the assessor parcels number for that, so we'd easily figure that out.
I'd like to walk it. Yeah, no, shocking. I know. Me too. And as I was driving in today, because I come that way from my office over near Home Depot, and I thought, yeah, it's a hillside and all that, except it's a hillside. Part of it, I haven't walked it, so I don't know. It's up on top. It looks at all the water. It's,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know what it's zoned for, but that could be potentially something the ratepayers could benefit from.
It's in the like city.
It's in Larkspur, or is it
in Santa Fe? Santa Fe?
I think it's in Santa Fe.
Yeah, yeah. City Santa Fe. We have hillside guidelines.
Okay.
But, we also have, in the entire Bay Area, a housing crisis,
yeah.
And one of the primary drivers is the lack of buildable land. If we have a site of...
let's go with 20.
Let's go with 20. Let's
yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
We should have that evaluated, obviously, first for any need that the agency might have.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if not, or if it's a long-term agency need, you know, in decades, that we could do something in the interim with it, then we need to do that.
I think a needs assessment makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, like there's a government code process for...
Yep.
Right, there's a process, but if you get Tattersall out here, have him give us a rough guess on...
I've talked to him about that before.
Oh, have you?
At the Marine Corps breakfast, yeah.
Yeah, and what was his thought?
He said, sure, he could help out with that.
Yeah. Yeah, here's his billable rate. Yeah. David Tattersall, he's done some work for the city. He does a great job. He's not cheap. But he would be, he could give us a good idea, and then, wow. Yeah. So... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very interested in learning more.
Hmm. And also to be thinking, aside from sort of that big project, I mean, there are all sorts of needs in the area and commercial interest in just space. You know, as we saw, just to park vehicles, mm-hmm. know, and park cars.
Mm-hmm. For the ferry. For the ferry.
Yeah, I wrote it here, as a matter of fact. Well, not all the way here, drove my car here, but so we should be thinking about kind of interim uses mm-hmm. that we can sort of productively employ this this property to generate revenue for our ratepayers, but also to enhance the commercial interests here
in
Santa Rafael and yeah. serve the community. So, yeah, I think
Sarah this is.
They're from Marin County and broader, but yeah, that's I would definitely be in favor of getting the ad hoc committee started, and would be interested in hearing which of you would be interested in being on it.
Well, I authored the Hillside Guidelines for Santa Fe.
You did.
I did it as a consultant. Got you a national award.
I'd love to serve on it. Yeah, I remember thinking when we first talked, I said, what are we doing with that property over there? So it's always been a source of interest.
And I have an interest in serving on it as well. Just I've done this in my previous career, and it's fun stuff. And also, I'd like to add that we might consider including this in our FY20 business plan. Just to sort of codify it, and we have a record that's not just sitting in a project engineer's file somewhere, and so that we sort of have it at a higher level, the result of it. And so. Okay. I will appoint myself and Director Kelly about to the ad hoc committee.
Awesome.
And then, and that will also, we would not have a quorum as well, with just two of us serving with staff on that, even in the eventuality of Larkspur. Request to withdraw goes forward, so that won't jeopardize that as well. Mm-hmm. So with just two of us on it. Okay.
Does the board want to take an action and approve forming the committee of two board members?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that goes approved. Very good.
Great.
Let's see, we have May informational items from Mr. Dow.
Yeah, just if the board has any questions on these, I can answer them.
Well, I'm glad you got the letter from the Regional Poly Board saying that under $10 million.
That was really good, yeah.
Yeah, and also their other comment was, calm down, we're gonna adjust things, as we said, everyone's jumping the gun on it. It seemed to be the response.
Yeah, that was good, too.
Yeah, so all that was good.
So it's a written response, and we're going to cite that later.
Yeah.
So usually these letters are not helpful to, not great news, always, but this is good news.
It's great news for the agency, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Any other questions on the informational items? Okay, seeing none. Moving on to item number 11, North Bay Watershed Association report.
Still there.
It's still there?
Yeah. After months and months of talking and doing, they came up with their strategic plan for what is the North Bay Watershed Association, and they're going to get us more of these eventually, because this is still the draft. But if anybody is interested,
sure.
It's growing, and I think as it grows, it will become more and more powerful, more and more of a voice in Sacramento, mm-hmm. And so that when monies are available to be used in the North Bay watershed, we'll have a voice to be able to get them. And so Solano County was one of the latest agencies to join the North Bay Watershed Association. And so aside from talking about what we've been talking about with the strategic plan, the gentleman from Solano County came and talked about how Solano County fits into the North Bay watershed. And one of the difficulties that they're facing right now is they have a tremendous amount of land out there that's undeveloped. And they would a lot of entities would like to get a hold of it and build housing. And how is that going to affect the North Bay watershed, the wildlife, the salmon that's happening up there. So that's a difficulty that they're having, is weighing between housing and watershed. And it turns out that they have 2,000 miles of creeks and streams in that whole Solano County. It's a huge amount. And so they're really paying a lot of attention, and it'll be years and years and years before.
There's a big fight now between the private property over there and BCDC trying to redefine Phil.
So anyway, that was really about that. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Very informative. Okay. Oral reports by any commissioners?
Yes.
Just a quick one. This is really Ross Valley Sanitary, but I thought I'd pass this on. We have an ad hoc outreach group to talk about fog, fats, oils, and grease, and flushable wipes that aren't flushable, other things like the lateral program. We have a small budget that we put on commercials on Comcast, which is working out very, very well. And I'll just let you know that we did make a decision to buy 4 30-second ads during the Warriors finals. So wow. We didn't go for the semis. We were like, nope, finals only. Wasn't that expensive. So 4 ads. So look for those. I think it brings some advertisement to this community about those things that cost us money, fog and wipes and other things. And so that's, I just want to mention that.
When you do that, is it only the Comcast or AT&T
yes.
delivered just to Marin County?
Yes, just Comcast and just Marin. Yeah.
Global.
Yeah, that would be $9 million in the ad. It was not that expensive. Surprisingly not that expensive.
Mr. Chair, I have a brief report. Also, did you get this?
I did not.
Okay. When I get more, we're going to get all copies.
This. Okay, cool. It's awesome. I believe I mentioned in a board member report 2 or 3 maybe meetings ago when we were discussing sizing the cogen engine that my colleague on the Corte Madera Council, Sloan Bailey, is also a board member at MCE. So after we expressed a desire to maximize the size of our cogen engine, we ran up against the issue with MCE's, what is it called, Fit Plus program that was going to basically subject us to forecasting requirements that we didn't think we could realistically meet. So we were hoping that we'd be able to work with MCE and negotiate a different contract that didn't involve those requirements. We had an exploratory meeting, Jason and I, with a board member and a staff member of MCE, and the walls that we ran into are state law, unfortunately. So the report is that there is no deal to be had there, sadly.
Well, thank you for following up.
Sure. Yeah, not for lack of trying.
That's good.
Okay, so just a couple things in the handout I'll point out. These are kind of touch on what the staff mentioned a minute ago. Okay. One is we have a new E&I technician, Tony Drady. He started on Monday, and he comes from the Loggins Brewery, where he was a graveyard mechanic and electrical technician. So I met him on Monday. He's a really nice guy, really experienced. He even operated their on-site wastewater plant. But he's just happy moving from the graveyard shift at Lagunitas down to the day shift here. And yeah, seems like a great person. And then the staff also mentioned one of our environmental service analysts, Jose Gutierrez, who's been here for about 11 years or so. He's accepted a job with Leo Sanitation and Flood Control. And he was, you know, not happy about doing that, but he lives in Dixon, and he just had, you know, a son, you know, what, about a year ago?
Not even that.
And he said by accepting the job in Vallejo, it saves an hour of his commute time home during the day. So it's just based on, you know, just saving the time in the morning coming to the agency and going home. He did say that, you know, the pay and benefits aren't as good there, but the quality of life and, you know, being there for his family is, you know, pretty important to him. Yeah, we understand that. And then I get to answer any of the questions you might have on the handout. You could call me, email me, or anything.
Any other reports? Seeing none? Okay. We have our next scheduled meeting on Tuesday, June 11th, 7 p.m. And then I guess we will adjourn this meeting and go into closed session for item 14.
You're welcome. So maybe just before you go into closed session, I get you like to send this.
Excellent.
Oh, she's got it.
Aside from the next 4 days, we're going to
thank you. Have a good night,
Sam. You too.
June 24th.
Wow.
I'll go for a ride with me before then.